Welcome back to Engaging Our People. I'm your host for this episode, Jonathan Stevens. We were just talking with Tessin and Simone about the Take a Knee event. Let's continue the conversation with Tessin and Simone as they get into their team and their roles here at Legacy Health.
So Tessin, with the announcement of your role, you being a part of Legacy, what happened after you joined the team?
Yeah, so President Correa had asked me to spend the next 100 days in observation mode. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what I did, in addition to other things. And within that time, I reviewed existing documents of what we knew. For example, all of the documents about the DAC, about the ERG work. I also received the recommendations and the notes from the listening sessions. I also gathered as much data that we had that could be considered diversity, equity, and inclusion data. For example, turnover and hiring data for diverse workforces, looking at health equity reports and tools that we had. And then also going on my own listening tours with mm-hmm. DEI champions who are providers and employees, meeting all of the chairs of the ERGs. So I felt pretty good that yeah. I did my due diligence in observing within the 100 days. And then I made some observations with this source material. And some of those observations included, number one, that broadly speaking, the organization in general was broadly in support of us being a diversity, equity, and inclusion focused organization with an aspiration to be anti-racist in whatever way that we could. Mm-hmm. At the same time, there was also a lot of confusion about what it would mean. What are the goals? What are the metrics to ensure that we are a diversity, equity, and inclusion focused organization?
Yeah.
I looked at the data and, you know, we actually had quite a bit of DEI and anti-racism data, but some of it was incomplete. A lot of it was underanalyzed. And the data that we did have that was quite telling was just not broadly made available and interpreted for leaders to do anything actionable about it. A lot of the listening sessions with DEI champions and ERG members, especially employees and providers of color, is that there was a lot of concern that some of our hiring and promotion processes were biased. Oh, wow. And that that's something that they had experienced quite a bit of. There was also a recognition, for example, that there's a lot of racial bias and violence towards our providers and employees and confusion about how exactly to report them because there's inconsistent reporting and experiences from doing that. There was also broad recognition that once we do know the areas that we can improve upon, whether it's in hiring, promotion, culture work, eliminating health disparities in our various locations, that we need to train employees quite regularly, as well as providing the kind of DEI competency materials that all employee groups should have easy, accessible access to. Mm-hmm. So with all of that, I went ahead and shared that with our leadership, our board, with President Correa. And you know, the good news was they're like, yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah, you know, very good. You know, yeah. What we were suspecting, you have been able to confirm. And mm-hmm. and so, you know, the long and short of it is the four FTEs that I was eventually approved for represents individuals and skill sets that will specifically focus on these observation points that I was able to make.
Wow.
During that time, a lot of different folks from different departments, and they really wanted to know, they wanted to see the direction. They wanted to see the footsteps of Legacy's leadership, mm-hmm. right? And it wasn't formulated to where they could do that right until you came. And so I think this program, this podcast with me sharing how it began from George Floyd, because that's a historical email that everybody, that's really what got it going.
Yeah.
Right. But everybody did not participate in the Take the Knee.
Yeah.
And everyone that participated in the Take the Knee didn't understand what happened after.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
So this podcast is going to give them the journey of what happened after and how we end up with the DEI department.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I was thinking in the back of my mind when we were working on this, because, you know, we were just flooded with emails and phone calls about check-ins, and what can I do? You know, you had folks just feeling guilty about their white privilege and give me something to read. I need to clean myself and go get baptized just so I just get clean, right? But, and then we were working with leadership, and we can only share so much because we wanted to be very careful, because Berg knew that this was the first time that we were at the table on this level that could make movement for Black employees.
Right.
Which really helps all employees, right? At the end, the end goal. Anyway, because everybody's happy. Black employees are happy. All employees, if you have people on your team not happy, then you can't have a good cohesiveness within the environment, right?
Yeah,
the work
yeah.
environment. So anyway, so I think this right here, Jonathan, this podcast is going to give the listeners the rest of the story that they never knew. The different steps that happened after the Take the Knee event. You know, and how leadership supported this. If I was leadership, I'd be off the top to hear this going.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Because, you know, in the culture of legacy, prior to Berg being able to sit at the table with them, they don't even know who we are. They ain't gonna do nothing. Talk to who?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It was like that.
Yeah.
Right? And the recommendations we shared with them was based on what we heard from the people.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I like is you gave the recommendation and the leadership did something you were actually not expecting. They went above and beyond what you asked for.
Exactly. Yeah. And we were shocked. We really were shocked about that. We was like, what you say? We got a what? Now let's get a good one. Because again, you know, we didn't want window dressing, and we didn't want to settle.
That was my fear. My biggest fear was, do not hire somebody
Because they look like us. You know what I'm saying? And or from, you know, the brown community, and then that's all good. And they're not going to come in and have the crucial conversations because we've had a whole lot of those.
Yeah.
You know, so that's why we were sitting. That's where it's always been a huge disconnect within our organization.
Well, and that is in itself another podcast, right?
Sure is. Because you came on the scene, honey. When I first was in the first meeting with you, I said, oh, my goodness. This one right here? Yes.
Yeah. And the good news is, and I say this all the time, I'm like, if you hired a VP of diversity, equity, inclusion, but I'm also a really, really good data person. Mm-hmm. I'm also somebody who really understands health equity. Yeah. I'm also an anthropologist. So I understand culture of fear, culture of engagement. I also feel very, very comfortable going out to our diverse communities because I'm from Portland. And that's not a problem for me. I'm not intimidated or worried if I get invited to a town hall where people are really, really upset at what Legacy did. I'm not really intimidated by that. So just like with Simone, she is a DEI program manager, but she's also somebody who has trust in the organization. We were just talking, I think, Megan, when you first came on, and we were talking about, you know, how if the food insecurity program for patients and employees takes off, you already said, well, are you plugged in with our Black Farmers Network? And she's like, I didn't even know we had one. So the organization gets so much more than just the DEI title in us.
Right.
We are exceptionally competent in a variety of areas, whether it's nurse training, whether it, you know, even our EEO and restorative justice officer. Yeah, he will be coming in and really helping us identify, you know, harassment and discrimination when it happens. But he's also a great trainer so that when you're a new employee, he helps you, you know, he's going to change the way we do mandatory education so that all new employees are told, oh, this is our standard.
This is
how you report harassment and discrimination. And if you're too new and you're afraid to share this with your boss, you come to me.
Yeah.
You know, so we're able to get the new folks as well as build trust with those within the organization that have always been afraid to report things, right? Everybody in my portfolio, everyone in our department, we are just experts in more than just DEI, which is great.
One of the things we gleaned from the listening session, and it just ringed out really loud, and as you shared, Jonathan, you had participated in one of them, was having a safe place. Having a safe place to share their experiences.
Yeah.
And that's something that Black Employees of Legacy did not have. And it was really important on who they shared their experience with, right? Someone that looked like them. Someone that came from the community they came from.
Right.
And so, you know, I think our department, well, I know from my experience at Legacy Health in co-chaired the Black Employee Resource Groups and really having my post on interacting with co-Black employees, that this department is very crucial because that's what it is. It's that safe place that doesn't represent, you know, authority, leadership. I'm going to get in trouble. There's going to be retaliation. You know, our department is a place where they can come and share it and feel safe to do so.
And what I would also add is it's really, really important to me, and I've said this to Simone many times, and I'm going to repeat it. My department, which is very new, I want us to model what a department of at least five, right? What a department of five, where we are so diverse, right? And yet we do really stressful work. And we can do that and still care for each other, be highly effective, and we're not assimilating to any kind of single culture where we can still maintain our diversity and not be at each other's throat, not be unethical, not be abusive. I want to model the way for us. And so a lot of times we talk about how Black employees don't feel safe about addressing the topics that concerns them. There's also white employees and white supervisors now that are afraid to say, I didn't know I did that. I don't even know what I don't know.
Yeah.
I have been so ignorant all my life and now it's not okay. And so I'm afraid that I'm so behind. So I want everyone on my team, when I say this is a safe place, we are a department where our white colleagues and leaders can also feel safe.
Exactly.
Talking to us and confiding in us and knowing we're not going to shame them or embarrass them or, you know what I mean? Everybody learns at their own pace, but what we value is that you have a love for learning and we are going to encourage it. We are not going to shame anybody because they don't know the right words or the right authors or the right movies.
Yes, yes.
I think, and it's not just white employees, but I think they're the ones that, are, you know, they are in the majority. And so oftentimes they will learn about their bias, right? They will feel, they will know that something has been done in a way that perpetuates in-group bias. And then they will, rather than figuring it out on their own, doing their own research, especially if you're a leader. You know, if you're a leader, you should be able to very quickly understand, okay, where did I go wrong and how do I fix it? But then oftentimes what they'll do is they'll go to a person of color who doesn't even have as much power as they do and ask them to fix it or to help them. Right? Even though it's their job and they're usually in a higher leadership role. And so then oftentimes what will happen is minoritized groups will say, but that, you know, they'll get upset for, and rightfully so, or they will feel exploited. And so that's where kind of the fear is, where the white leader will be like, oh my gosh, I stepped in it again. I didn't realize. You know, oftentimes they will think the recognition of what they have been doing incorrectly is in itself very humbling, right? Mm-hmm. Only to find out that even in their seeking of help, they may have also reinforced their dominance. And so there is this concern that I know so little, I'm going to hurt somebody or I'm going to upset someone. And then they do. They do. Mm-hmm. And so they almost need kind of the safe place to fall. We like to call it a DEI consultation.
Yes, yes.
You know, they will call on us. Uh-huh. We will ask them to share with us what is the problem that you would like for us to help you with today. Mm-hmm. And then they start peeling the layers and that's when we perform our magic. Yeah. Help them feel comfortable sharing what they think they may have done that created upset or inequality. Mm-hmm. And then we help kind of dissect what happened and how they can repair some of the harm in either an interpersonal way or in a systematic way.
On part three of Engaging Our People.
This was the first time that our organization actually utilized the ERG groups. Mm-hmm. You know, prior to that, our upper leadership, I don't know if they even knew what ERG groups, ERG groups were, but this was the turning point for the visibility and the importance that ERG groups share in the fabric of legacy health. Mm-hmm.
This is your host, Jonathan Stevens, signing off on the second part from the first episode of Engaging Our People. Stay tuned for part three of this conversation with Simona Tessin coming at you soon.